the morning after Apple's event, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, tap or click that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss a single episode. Now, here's usually what we do. We cover a couple articles of tech going on during the day, and a couple articles on gadgets going on, and a couple gaming articles as well. So hopefully you find something you like, hopefully you enjoy it very much, and hopefully you click that subscribe button. But I'll let you in on a secret. We don't tell everybody else about this, you know, source. Think of it this way. Think of it as, you know, the book in the wizard's back pocket. How does a wizard know all of this stuff? Why do all of these people keep coming back to the wizard for more wisdom? Well, wizard's not going to give away his source, and, well, you're not going to give away yours. So you can tell everybody about the tech news that you heard today. You can enjoy all of the bragging rights that go along with, and everybody's saying, wow, how did you know all this stuff? All knowing in the back of your mind that you heard it here on The Latest in Tech News. So, tell others about what you heard today. Don't tell others about the show. We're going to kind of keep this hush-hush to ourselves. I know we're heard worldwide in over 65 countries and growing, but just keep this between us, shall we? So, it's Tuesday. It seems like most of the journalists have woken up from Apple's event yesterday. That was all I saw in the news all over the place between that and the Sony announcement, everything that went along with that. Yeah, Sony had an announcement, apparently just blew past everybody. So we'll be getting into all of that and more, but before we do, let's head on over to today's trivia, shall we? Alright, last episode, I asked you guys a question. Why are LCD screens so flat? And checking on the answers that we got in, well, it's still anybody's game at this point. Anybody can enter in for the running. I didn't get any correct answers back, but the trivia, in case you guys are interested, the answer to yesterday's episode is, why are LCD screens so flat? Well, because they're backlit liquid crystal displays, not a vacuum tube like CRT screens. Now, for those of you millennial generation or older, you might not know at all that monitors back in the day used to be this big, fat, honking thing that you had to sit down on this big old desk, and you had to have a lot of room for the desk, and it was this big, heavy, awkward thing, because essentially it was like a vacuum tube projecting images and electrons on the screen, and it needed all of that in order to work. But I'm so glad LCD screens, liquid crystal displays came around, made stuff so much simpler, so much easier, so much lighter to use. So that's why LCD screens are so flat. It's new technology, get with the times. So for those of you who are interested in saying, hey, Taylor, how do I join in on a trivia? Well, very easy. You can join us on Twitter. We have an announcement usually every day that goes out for what the latest trivia question is. Very simply, if you want to play along, join us on Twitter and reply with your answer to the question. So the link to this tweet will also be listed in our show notes for this episode, just in case you're wondering. The first correct answer will be announced in the next episode along with your Twitter username. So everybody has a chance of winning bragging rights of saying, ha, I got that answer right! And then, you know, bragging about it for about a week. So, today's question, if you are interested and ready to play for this episode at least, in computer terms, what is SSD? Post your answers on Twitter, at TechNewsGadget, and we shall see who figures out the nut to this question of what is SSD. Moving on. All right, moving right along here. Before we can check in on the news of today, we always have to take a look back In tech history, being that today is March 26, 2019, on this day in history, in 1999, Melissa was unleashed. Yep, the first email virus to cause widespread damage and one of the fastest spreading viruses in history, Melissa was released into the wild on an early Friday morning and within 3 days would infect between 100,000 and 250,000 computers around the world. While the virus did not directly cause any damage, the sheer volume of email that it generated crashed many Microsoft corporate email servers. So, yeah, it spammed so bad. It was essentially DDoS on steroids for email. It crashed servers all over the place. And that's mainly why Gmail came about, because they're like, hey guys, look, free email. No, I'm kidding. They're probably like, don't put the Melissa virus on us. We're sick of Hotmail. That's probably, I bet you that was why the virus creator created Melissa to begin with, is because they hated @hotmail.com, because that URL sucked for email. Still does. Still waiting for the day to, you know, just put a fork in it and say we're done and get to along to, you know, better domain name endings for email addresses. Oh, gosh. Oh, also, on this day in history, in 1996, Hewlett-Packard co-founder David Packard dies. Hewlett-Packard Company co-founder David Packard dies after several weeks of illness. With fellow Stanford graduate Bill Hewlett, Packard founded Hewlett-Packard in Palo Alto garage in 1938, spurring the development of what was come to be known as Silicon Valley. The company's first product was an oscillator, eight of which Disney used in its groundbreaking film Fantasia. And if you didn't know that, now you know. Since then, HP has made a name in personal computers, laser printers, calculators, accessories, and test equipment. But it's mostly well known for gaming and computer type stuff. Personal computing, and to an extent, commercial and enterprise type products. So, with that out of the way, let's head on over to today's tech news. Okay, I knew this was coming. It's the morning after Apple's event. The only thing that I didn't see, mainly complained about a lot, was the Apple Arcade. A lot of people are really looking forward to that. That's what I'm looking forward to. Some people are bashing the Apple Card. In case you've been living under a rock and you happen to miss out on yesterday's episode and yesterday's news, the Apple event broke. They unleashed like four or five different service product type things, all of which had pluses added onto it because, you know, for some odd reason, it makes it cooler. So they introduced a titanium card on your Apple Card, iPhone wallet app thing that kind of was interesting, but not too many people are interested about that. There are a couple of caveats built into it. The Apple Arcade was announced, and that's actually kind of interesting. I'll have a link to yesterday's episode in the show notes if you guys wanted to tune into yesterday's episode. By the way, if you wanted to get the access to any of the articles that we have talked about today, let me move this over here really quick. Head on over to technewsgadget.net/93 for the show notes, or if you're listening on a mobile device right now and you're in your smartphone app, all you do is swipe up or left or right or however you get more information, and you should have the article links right there, and you can click to peruse or tap at your leisure to enjoy any articles that you want. So yesterday's episode was episode 92. They also talked about the Apple TV Plus, and that, okay, there are some problems inherent with it. I liked how one news organization came out, the headline is, Apple unveiled groundbreaking new yesterday's technology in yesterday's event. it's like, you guys are a little bit behind the times. Why would you want to, you know, do all this cool stuff with the Apple TV Plus? I mean, you're Apple's going, oh, we need to have original content and stuff. It's like, yeah, because Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and YouTube and everybody else already does that. Guys, I don't think we thought of about this strategy, what's going on here, really. So that was the problem with that. And now I finally get to the meat and potatoes of what I wanted to complain about yesterday. I get to complain about at length, because on TechCrunch, Josh Constein, oh, he ripped right into Apple News Plus. So, I'll read some of the article, I'll sum up some of the points, I'll give my thoughts, and then you can read the rest of the article, and we'll move on to the next news. So, Apple doesn't care about news, it cares about reoccurring revenue. That's why publishers are crazy to jump into bed with Apple News Plus. They're rendering their own subscription options unnecessary in exchange for a sliver of what Apple pays out for mere $10 a month it charges for unlimited reading. Think about it. The unfathomable platform risk here makes Facebook's exploitative instant articles program seem toothless in comparison. On Facebook, publishers became generic providers of dumb content for the social network's smart pipe that stole from the customer relationship. But at least publishers were giving away their free content. Apple News Plus threatens to open a massive hole in news site paywalls, allowing their best premium articles to escape. Publishers hope they'll get exposure to new audiences, but any potential new or existing direct subscriber to a publisher will no longer be willing to pay a healthy monthly fee to occasionally access what top content there is while supporting the rest of the newsroom. They'll just cherry-pick what they want via News Plus, and Apple will shave off a few cents and flip it over to the publisher while owning all the data, customer relationship, and power. Well, why subscribe to that publisher? I already pay for Apple News Plus. Should be the question haunting journalists' nightmares. For readers, $10 per month, all-you-can-eat buffet from 300-plus publishers sounds like a juicy deal. Well, and it is. But it could accelerate the demise of some of those outlets, leaving society with fewer watchdogs and storytellers. If publishers agree to shake hands with the devil, the Dark Lord will just garner more followers, flip over a few pennies, laugh maniacally, and run off into the evening, making this ruinous offer that much more tempting. But they won't know that it'll be running off maniacally laughing. There's so many horrifying aspects of Apple News Plus for publishers, it's best to just list each one and break them down. Number one, no relationship with the reader. To succeed, publishers need attention, data, and revenue, and Apple News Plus gets in the way of all three. Readers visit Apple's app, not the outlet site that give it free rein to promote conference tickets, merch, research reports, and other moneymakers. Publishers don't get their Apple News Plus readers' email addresses for follow-up marketing, cookies for ad targeting and content personalization, or their credit card info to speed up future purchases. At the bottom of articles, further, and this is annoying, Apple News Plus recommends posts by an outlet's competitors. Readers end up without a publisher's bookmark in their browser toolbar, app on their phone, or even easy access to them from News Plus's default tab. They won't see the outlet's curation that highlights its most important content or develop a connection with its home screen layout. They'll miss callouts to follow individual reporters and chances to interact with innovative new interactive formats. But perhaps worst of all, publishers will be thrown right back into the coliseum of attention. They'll need to debase their voice and amp up the sensationalism of hotter headlines look, or risk their users straying an inch over to someone else, because it's literally a tap away and they tell you to go to somebody else at the end of the article anyways. It's literally clickbait 2.0 all over again. They'll have no control of how they're surfaced. Number two, they're at the mercy of the algorithm. Which outlets earn money on Apple News Plus will be largely determined by what Apple decides to show in those first few curatorial slots on screen. At any time, Apple could decide it wants more visual photo-based content or less serious world news because it placates users even if they're less informed. It could suddenly preference shorter takes because they keep people from bouncing out of the app, or more generic shallow dives that won't scare off casual readers who don't seem to even care about that outlet anyways. What if Apple signs up a publisher's biggest competitor and sends them all the attention, decimating the first outlet's discovery while still exposing its top paywalled content for cheap access? And by cheap, I mean pennies. Remember when Facebook wanted to build the world's personalized newspaper and delivered tons of referral traffic, then abruptly decided to favor friends and family content while leaving publishers to starve? Well, now the outlets are giving Apple News Plus the same iron grip on their businesses. They might hire a ton of talent to give Apple what it wants, only for the strategy to change. The Wall Street Journal says it's hiring 50 staffers to make content specifically for Apple News Plus. Those sound like some of the most precarious jobs in a business right now. Now, remember when Facebook got the Wall Street Journal, Guardian, and more to build social reader apps and then one day just shut it off and then shut down the whole platform? Well, News Plus revenue will be a drop in the bucket of iPhone sales, and Apple could at any time decide it's not thirsty anymore and let News Plus rot. That and the eventual realization of platform risk and loss of relationship with the reader led the majority of Facebook's instant article launch partners like the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Vox to drop the format entirely. Publishers would be wise to come to that same conclusion now before they drive any more eyeballs to News Plus. So, yeah, that along with the fact that, okay, So for the $9.99 a month that you'd be paying to have access to 300 outlets and articles and all that stuff, apparently Apple's taking a 50% cut. The remaining 50% gets divvied up to whoever happened to have the most eyeballs, clicks, taps, links, anything interested through that. But here's a realization. Apple News Plus really isn't built for news. The third and final point, at least in terms of the article that I'll be reading for you so far. If you want to read the rest of the article and share your thoughts, you can certainly do that. Let us know on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube in the comment section what you think. Apparently, Apple acquired the magazine industry's self-distribution app Texture a year ago. Now it's trying to cram in traditional text-based news with minimal work to adapt the product. That means National Geographic and Sports Illustrated get featured billing with animated magazine covers and ways to browse the latest issue. News outlets get demoted far below with no intuitive or productive way to skim between articles beyond swiping through a chronological stack. I only see Wall Street Journal's content below my magazines, a massive at-home feature from Architectural Digest, a random gadgets and gear section of magazine articles, another huge call out for the new issue of The Cut, plus four pieces inside of it, and one more giant look at Bloomberg's profile of Dow Chemical. That means those magazines are likely to absorb a ton of taps and engagement time before users even make it to the Wall Street Journal, which will only then score a few cents per reader. Here's the interesting thing. Even when it came to Apple News, this is me talking, is that everybody, all the publishers are like, oh, cool, Apple News. I could jump on it, get a lot of, exposure, get a lot of, might not have to change up the format too much, but I'll get a lot of interested people, and then they'll come over to my site. It turns out they didn't. See, one news outlet went so far to say that they could generate more revenue off of 50,000 people clicking an article on their website than they could if 6 million people tapped on their same article in Apple News. That's sad. It's, from a journalistic standpoint and news, that's just, it's sad. It's almost like nickel and diming. It's almost like the music industry all over again. People going, oh, this is great. I can, listen to their whole album. Oh, wait, I just want to listen to one song, 99 cents. No, that's all I think of you guys. Where's the experience? Where's the trust? Where's the, oh my gosh, clowns, it's 2019. So magazines often publish big standalone features that don't need a ton of context. News articles are part of a continuum of information that can be laid out on a publisher's own site where they have control, but not on Apple News Plus. And to make articles visually more appealing, Apple strips out some of the cross-promotional recirculation, sign-up forms, and commerce opportunities on which publishers depend. So here's a great idea. Don't sign up for Apple News Plus. I know it's going to be a hard sell, but if you enjoy the content that you get from the outlets you get the content from, show them some support. Actually, go out and sign up for a subscription. They put money and time and energy and effort in. The least you could do is, flip them a couple of dollars and say thank you. It's well worth your time because, quite honestly, they do a lot more on their own sites, on their own medium, on their own format, on their own site, than they will partnering with stupid Apple News Plus, just going the same way that Facebook Instant Articles are. We're not even part of Instant Articles anymore for here at Tech News Gadget, just because it's, who cares? If I could get my site to load in the same amount of time that it takes for it to load on Instant Articles, that defeats the whole purpose of wanting to be on Instant Articles. And I can keep them on my site. This is great, right? Anyways, you might not understand this from like a reader standpoint, but I understand this from a news and a publisher's standpoint because trying to stand out there among the crowd and say, hey, we have interesting content here and trying to develop a connection with the reader and seeing what they want to learn more about are difficulties of every news publisher, outlet, organization of any kind. So, yeah, Apple News Plus, that's a no-no for me. That's all I'm going to cover for this article so far. If you want to read the rest of it, the link for it will be in the show notes for the episode. That is episode number 93. Let's move on. So McDonald's wants to use machine learning to serve fast food, and to which I say, it's about time. I thought you guys did this already. The past couple of years have made it abundantly clear on just how much of our personal data is being tracked by corporations every day. Not that that's bad. There's so much information out there that people are saying, oh, I need privacy, man. I need to stop tracking. I keep going into McDonald's and buying fries all the time. Stop selling me fries. Okay, that who cares? Now, one of the world's biggest fast food companies is hopping on the bandwagon. McDonald's announced on Monday that it had acquired Dynamic Yield, a tech company that specializes in recommendations based on machine learning. Dynamic Yield's algorithms can gather data about customers on behalf of companies to generate Amazon-like recommendations, among other things. And this is where it gets interesting. The Golden Arches spent about $300 million on the tech company, and McDonald's also published a video of their CEO, Steve Easterbrook, explaining the rationale behind the decision. I don't blame them. Put simply, McDonald's will deploy Dynamic Yield's technology to try to sell you more things using customer data. McDonald's claims drive-thru stations will be able to adjust what they display based on weather, time of day, and trending menu items. It's similar to how a site like Amazon will recommend comparison purchases based on what other customers have bought when you buy something. The restaurant's press release said the new technology would instantly suggest and display new items based on what you've already ordered. However, I will say this. Can you please, and I've been into a couple of McDonald's, and I've really tried to use their whole, that wall. I don't know. Have you been to McDonald's recently? That big wall thing that they have, where you can just go up to the kiosk and you can press a button for what you want to order. I have no idea what clown programmed it. The UX sucks. How it looks sucks. If I want to go in and I say, I want a cheeseburger. I look and I'm like, what the heck is this? Oh, I can click cheeseburger, but then it goes cheeseburger this, cheeseburger that, cheeseburger that, cheeseburger that, and cheeseburger barf. And I'm like, okay, how about a cheeseburger when I tap on a cheeseburger? Or here's something else. Give me something like a layout of the display of what you have to sell that literally is like 4 feet behind the cashier. Just give me that slide and tell me to tap on what I want. Oh my gosh, you guys would find out. Okay, enough about my rant about McDonald's. I've tried so many times to order from that kiosk. It's a pain in the butt. So if McDonald's, you're listening, or somebody at McDonald's is listening, put this up the chain and tell them to get to work on it, because I would really, really love to use the kiosk. It just sucks. Anyways, go to McDonald's on a hot day and it might recommend a frozen treat for you. For example, McDonald's would ideally use a technology to get customers to buy things they didn't know they wanted. McDonald's did run limited tests of these techniques in 2018 and apparently liked the results enough to extend it to its entire business. It's not too hard to believe that data-driven recommendations would drive up sales. I mean, if it works for Amazon, guarantee it'll work for McDonald's as well. What do you guys think? I know what you're probably saying right now. Yes, the reason I went to McDonald's on a hot summer day is because I wanted to buy an ice cream and maybe a soda. I didn't need McDonald's to recommend it to me. I already was, but thanks for the afterthought. You guys are incorrigible. All right, moving on to another tech news. Google is launching AMP for Gmail, making your email feel more like web pages. Now, this is kind of an article I could get behind. I'm actually kind of intrigued. I've kind of liked the layout more and more about how email can look. It's a static view that's in desperate need of updating. Google first announced a little more than a year ago that it would eventually be bringing its Accelerated Mobile Pages framework, or AMP for short, to email, which would allow for the creation of richer and more dynamic experiences in a digital realm where people still spend an outsized portion of their day. Today, Google announced the arrival of AMP for email, officially bringing the capabilities to Gmail that return your messages into something that actually resembles an interactive web page-like experience. In a blog post today, Gmail product manager Akesh Saini said that bringing AMP to Gmail is an outgrowth of how much web experiences have changed over the past decade. Despite how those experiences have changed from static, flat content to interactive apps, though, email hasn't kept up with the pace of that change. Starting today, we're making emails more useful and interactive in Gmail. Your emails can stay up to date, so you're always seeing the freshest information, like the latest comment threads and recommended jobs. With dynamic email, you can easily take action directly from within the message itself, like RSVP to an event, fill out a questionnaire, browse a catalog, or respond to a comment. He offers Google Docs as one example, and the way that comments flow into Gmail messages, instead of getting a barrage of email notifications when, say, someone mentions you in a comment, now you'll just see a constantly updated thread where you can reply and resolve comments from within that message. Businesses are already starting to use these capabilities to make their emails more actionable and relevant to recipients. Over the next few weeks, businesses like Booking.com, Freshworks, and Pinterest will start sending out missives that showcase Google's abilities here. In terms of who will start getting these and when, dynamic Gmail messages will begin rolling out to web users today. Mobile support is coming soon, and Saini also points out that if you're using another mail app with Gmail, you'll see the static version of the email. So obviously use either the Gmail app, which is kind of iffy, but I'd use it because I guess it works out fine for me, or desktop version. So Gmail users rejoice, we finally have a much better layout of the email format. Alright, moving on to some gadget news. Huawei is working on a stylish series of smart glasses. Alongside the P30 Pro, the P30, and a bunch of accessories, Huawei had a surprise. Smart glasses. And no, it isn't 2016. The company is working with Korean eyewear and pop culture influencer Gentle Monster to produce a line of smartphones eyewear that people might be willing to wear in public. CEO Hankook Kim took to the stage in Paris to, well, badmouth Snapchat specs. Here we go. Before hurling out some hollow design platitudes and, well, words of little of consequence. But that doesn't matter much because the family of frames looks pretty good. The lack of cameras also means it, to some extent, sidesteps a lot of privacy concerns. Now, there's still an awful lot of technology inside the frames, however, which betrays how simple these early renders appear. You'll be able to answer calls by tapping the arm of the glasses, with the arms housing directional mic and speakers, as well as batteries that can be charged wirelessly through the companion case. Surprisingly, it has a pretty big 2200 milliamp battery inside, which should go the distance. There will be voice assistant access built in too. Expect more details soon. The glasses will apparently launch sometime in July of 2019. So there you go. You now have smart glasses to go with your smartphone. Smart deal. Okay, so this, moving on to the gaming news. I can't talk. I'm still trying to figure out the format. Okay, first we cover tech, then we cover gadgets, then we cover gaming. And if you haven't gotten that already, now you do. And if you did, tell me, because I keep forgetting. So, some interesting news. By the way, if you want any of the show notes for any of the articles mentioned today, head on over to technewsgadget.net/93, and you'll be able to get all the show notes there that you want, and more. Apparently, PlayStation 4 full game downloads are being pulled from retailers, according to Sony. Sony has confirmed that it will cease selling game digital download codes through brick-and-mortar retailers. The new policy will go into effect on April 1st, but you'll still be able to purchase digital games without putting your credit card info into Sony's PlayStation Network storefront. We can confirm that as of April 1st, 2019, it's not a joke, Sony Interactive Entertainment will no longer offer full games through SIE's Global Digital at Retail program, a PlayStation spokesperson told The Verge. This decision was made in order to continue to align key businesses globally. To support full games and premium editions, SIE will introduce increased denominations at select retailers. DLC, add-ons, virtual currency, and season passes will still be available. Now, you can still purchase digital currency through the retailers, as well as add-ons to other games, but not download codes for the game themselves. Now, this puts, obviously, GameStop in a pickle. The company has not detailed what new denominations of currency will be available or where. Still, this will make it more difficult to gift digital game purchases to friends, since that option currently still doesn't exist on a PlayStation Network. I don't know why it doesn't. It's 2019, people. Get your act together. It's kind of like talking to Fortnite again. The word of the change in policy first circulated in a Wario 64 account, which noted a policy memo given to retailers. The change also impacts some existing pre-orders for upcoming games like Mortal Kombat 11 or Days Gone, as the memo says there will be a one-week period after release to buy a download code in the store. It seems as if retailers themselves will be responsible for helping transition to the physical copies for games that will no longer have a digital option. The move would appear especially risky for GameStop, as both new and pre-owned sales have been hurt by the rise of digital downloads across all platforms. The company has recently attempted to pivot towards pop culture collectibles. It recently began looking for a buyer, but stopped the effort without finding one. Weebush securities analyst Michael Pachter suggested at the time that rumors of discless consoles and streaming services could have a severe impact on GameStop's business. And seeing as those Stadia, now Apple Arcade are all coming out, and they're all going to this digital format, might be the beginning of the end. So, yeah, for those of you who are all excited about buying digital game copy and game codes to hand out to your friend for their birthday or to, you know, use for yourself for when you got home for later, well, forget about it, because now if you go to an actual retail location, brick and mortar, you're going to have to buy a physical disc to use to give to your friend for his birthday or whatever event, or for you to use for your opening night release debut, or you could just, I guess, buy it digitally. So, yeah, at least as far as Sony's concerned, that's the way it is, I guess. Moving on to next gaming news, fans are reacting to Sekiro's most bizarre trap is perfection. Now, I won't spoil it here, but From Software, the developers of Bloodborne, Dark Souls, and now Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice, have always trolled their fans with surprise enemies. While From fans always expect to learn through death, players have found a new enemy in Sekiro that may take the cake for most creative encounter. Warning, this post contains spoilers for the first 10 hours of Sekiro's Shadows Die Twice. If you haven't reached a castle region, turn back now. Don't listen to the next, what I'm about to say. In the Ashina Castle region, there's a large town with loads of enemies on the ground, leaving rooftops as the best area of approach. Here, assassins dressed like owls wait behind corners or perch on the edges of the roofs. One assassin in particular takes some extra initiative and hides in the clouds. To the delight of viewers, this assassination is the perfect catch for ruining streamers' runs. So there's a video about apparently streamers reacting to this, and it's perfect. I won't play it here, but I'll have a link to it in the show notes. In actuality, the assassin is hiding on a kite attached to the side of the castle. It's only slightly less impressive than hiding in the clouds themselves. When players reach a certain threshold on the rooftop, the assassin leaps off the kite, plummets to the earth, and hopefully into the player. The attack deals as much damage as you'd expect a full-grown owl man with a keychain of knives landing on you to do. At the time most players reach the area, it's usually enough damage to kill them immediately, and if not, well, it's going to make the next fight that much harder. Players can dodge it if they know he's coming, but all players, even and especially streamers, which is what makes this great, they have to die to him at least once. It's a new rite of passage, as it were, and if you haven't played Sekiro, well, keep an eye out for Owl Ninja Man. Moving on to the last article we have today in gaming, Five Nights at Freddy's announced for the PlayStation VR. Sony held a State of Play livestream news event yesterday, and for the debut presentation, a gaming company unveiled a slew of virtual reality games coming to PlayStation VR. One of the spookier options, Five Nights at Freddy's VR Help Wanted, is slated to release April 2019 for PlayStation VR, as well as Oculus, Steam, and HTC Vive. In this version of the game, you'll try to fend off haunted animatronics and scenarios from the original games, as well as new situations exclusive to the virtual reality version, because you get the whole jump scare. This is going to be great. I can't wait to watch the videos of people playing this and this, sitting in the green screen and jumping around getting scared and generally just smashing stuff and throwing stuff and screaming and running out of the room. This is gonna be great. Here's what I will say. Please, okay, if Achievement Hunter guys, please make Gavin play this game. That would be great. I will be the first one lined up to watch. I would love to see what happens. Now, in the debut trailer, you could see enemies coming toward the camera and performing their signature jump scares at the player. Also worth noting, based on the footage, it seems that the player has to physically look around for tasks such as handling the camera. Likely, this detail will make looking back and forth between scenes all the more intense. So, for those of you horror fans who enjoy Five Nights at Freddy's or any other horror game, I think you guys will have a lot of fun with this one. Just the VR aspect of it is going to be awesome. So, With that being said, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, and everywhere else podcasts are heard. And you can watch a video of this on YouTube or Facebook as well. By the way, if we missed something on the show that you wanted to hear about, be sure to let us know on our Twitter and Facebook pages. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you could give a five-star rating and double check that you are subscribed. And if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.